You are listening to Fanthatrax.
He's waiting.
Classic Star Wars and the collectibles they gave us. From vintage Star Wars to the modern era of the saga. This is Collecting Tracks. Here are your hosts, Richard Hutchinson and Chris Letty.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Collecting Tracks. I'm Richard Hutchinson.
And I'm Chris Letty.
And we're hosts for episode 11, heading to NPR station to pick up some collecting merch. Okay, Chris, believe it or not, I'm not even exactly sure about under number 11, you know, because our number stopped at 9.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, with number 10 seems to be a collecting track special. And then we another special as part of the podcast day. So I'm going with 11.
Yeah, we'll roll with it.
Now, Chris, it hasn't been that long since we last recorded our show, but I'm sure you've been up to a lot. And how things been for you over the last few months?
Oh yeah, things are always moving and shaking over here. We've had thankfully a pretty light winter, but still made it up to the mountains to go snowboarding with my two girls. So that's kept us busy this winter. Been traveling a bunch for work recently. Also, I've been wrenching on my BMW project car. That's been fun. And then one big thing is I've been buying up collections for some inventory as my side hustle, Letty's Collectibles. I'm going to be set up with a booth, the New England Toy and Record Show in Dover, New Hampshire. But yeah, there's going to be a fair number of guests that have appeared in various Star Wars projects doing autographs and pictures and stuff. So it's pretty cool to have a show like this in my town and to have some of these actors and people behind the scenes showing up and going to be hanging out for a couple of days, and hope to see a lot of collectors and fans, and just have a lot of great conversations. Yeah, that's kind of been what's going on in my neck of the woods.
Well, I've got to say, Chris, I've seen a lot of Star Wars guests at a lot of different cons spread out across America over Facebook recently. I mean, Ian McDiarmid seems to be going all over the place, Mike Quinn, so it's really good seeing them getting out there and traveling a lot.
Yeah, the promoter for the show, he's made a lot of really good connections and trying to get some of these performers, actors, to do their first shows. And, they're not the biggest names, but it's still cool to have a small show that you can just walk up to their table and just have a conversation with them and, get more than you do at, some of the bigger conventions where it's just like you see them for 5 seconds and that's it. There's a lot of cons and smaller shows all over the place. I think, they realize that having all sorts of types of guests, bring people in from all around.
Absolutely. And certainly over in the UK, we want to see more crew. We've seen a lot of cast recently, and the crew seems to be, I don't know if they're getting pushed to one side or whether they just now stop attending, but perhaps they're not getting invited, but certainly we want to see more crew over here.
Yeah, I hear you there. It's great to have the variety of guests, because you can hear all the different stories from all the different perspectives, show and film production, because we're varying degrees of fans. Some people love everything about the movies, the shows, everything. And some people, really like to focus in on various aspects. So I think it's great just having that, that chance to meet somebody. It's not going to cost a fortune. And plus you get to see cool collectibles. And this is also, this show in particular, they have music memorabilia and stuff too. So there's a bunch of different things for people to check out.
Yeah, absolutely. If I was in the area, I'd pop it myself. So it's nice to see something in your hometown. Absolutely. Don't get a lot. Well, we're still perplexed with work because the inspectors who inspect the schools in our country, they have time limits, and they're supposed to hit you within a certain time limit, but they've gone over now by quite a few weeks, which is quite odd. I've got 3 weeks and maybe 3 days and I'll be in Tunisia.
Wow.
So what I've been doing today is I've been just double checking my itinerary, making sure I've got Durba covered really well. What you've got to take into account of is, certainly when you go to somewhere like Tunisia, is your Wi-Fi's going to go off, your phone could
good
go
point.
Dead.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to be stuck in the middle of nowhere with looking around at sand and buildings and losing track of where I am. So I've been going back through them all, and certainly the Maga Gorge bit, I was really poor in my planning, because basically what would have happened was I would have arrived there and I would have walked up the gorge and turned around and come back and thought, well, what have I seen? What have I not seen? So I'd spend another couple of hours putting some screen grabs in. I managed to find some photographs from others who've been to the area fairly recently and put them in side by side next to the screenshots, and using some of the resources out there. Gus Lopez helped us out a lot by giving us some advice. Davine Anderson from Galaxy Tours, he's got a wonderful website which helps pinpoint some of the things. So I'm just super excited. The next time we talk, I will have been to Tatooine.
That's going to be something, man. I hope it's a great trip for you, and I'll be living vicariously through your pictures and stuff.
Well, I'm hoping each night I'll be able to upload them on my Facebook page from the hotel Wi-Fi, because I'm not going to get Wi-Fi in many places. I know that over there.
The struggles that we have with technology.
Hi, this is Ethan Sachs, writer of Bounty Hunters, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
So, a bonkers title, speaking of technology, then. obviously, it's a thinly veiled suggestion that we're going to cover the NPR radio dramas today. But, Chris, what I first want you to come on is, when were you first aware of the NPR radio dramas? When did them first come on your radar?
It's sad to say, for me, it wasn't till that long ago. I mean, I had heard of them, I think, in the 90s, but I didn't really understand what they were. I had come across, a few tapes and stuff like that, but I never really, just didn't put two and two together. It wasn't until like the early 2010s when I was like, oh man, I should probably check these things out. But I'm glad I did. Even though it was pretty late in my, fandom, because they offer so much more and such a different experience than the movies.
I'm not too dissimilar to you, to be honest with you. So I want to say around about 2000, I would have been getting some of the EU novels in audiobook format from the local library. And as you can, expect in the northeast of England, there weren't that many. And I was often ordering them in, and the library were buying them for me to copy on the tapes. I think I was the only person in the whole area that was actually renting these out. I was thinking, oh, how much are these are paid for them. And then I got the BBC Lord of the Rings, which I don't know if you've heard that, but that's an amazing adaptation. And when I purchased that, I spotted that there was a Star Wars one as well. And I just honestly assumed it was going to be similar to the EU books, where they were just read out. But once I'd realised that Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels were in them, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to check these out. And boy, was I blown away. I was absolutely blown away. So wouldn't it be too far? I don't think it would have been as late as 2010, but maybe about 2005, 2006. I think I would have certainly listened to the Star Wars one. I certainly got that one first, with Empire being not too after that, but Jedi was way later. Almost as similar as when it was actually released. So obviously the radio broadcast, when it came out, it was certainly very early on and not far after, but I didn't realize it was released in the UK, because NPR I don't know if you can fill me in a little bit more on that, but is that like a free American radio?
Yeah, National Public Radio. NPR is like size-wise, but I consider it one of the bigger outlets for news and stories and the like, but a lot of people listen to it. So yeah, I can't say it's something that I listen to, but I would say, a couple of generations older than me listen to it a lot, or used to back in the day. It might be a little bit different these days, but yeah, it's a pretty big news outlet.
It would just focus on news, and I'm guessing it's similar to our Radio 4, where our Radio 4 has a very set audience now. So there'll be soap operas that are designed for radio would be on it, and there would be news stories, but they wouldn't play music other than an odd, 20-second clip if they were discussing some latest. Yeah, similar kind of thing.
Yes, very, very similar, almost to the T.
I mean, obviously, we're not going to spend the whole show talking about the quality of the show because it's a collecting podcast. But I do want to say, for anybody who's not listened to the NPR Radio Dramas, you certainly want to check out the first two episodes of the Star Wars one for sure, because, you know, you've probably got, I think, about 45-minute episodes, and you've got the first two episodes take place before Star Wars A New Hope, the movie, starts. And it's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Loved it. I was absolutely enthralled to listen to the first episode. You know, such good stuff. And obviously, we knew a lot of that stuff from the cutscenes and the deleted scenes. But Brian Daley, who also wrote the Han Solo novels, he obviously had a lot of artistic license on episode two, where he pretty much invented a lot of backstory and things that we now know isn't canon because of Rogue One and things like that. But wonderful, absolutely wonderful, and it was a great thing of George Lucas to do, to give Brian Daley such confidence.
Oh yeah, I mean, it just added a lot more depth to you know, what was going on with our, you know, main characters and in their situations, where, you know, episode one discusses, you know, it goes into Luke and he's on Tatooine and hanging out with his friends Biggs and everybody, and then episode two, it gets into the acquisition of the Death Star plans and like things on Alderaan, and it's cool, you know, even though it's like not really canon per se, it's just really neat to hear that, you know, those stories played out in this format.
A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back were released pretty much on schedule, but Return of the Jedi was a decade later due to, I think it was some kind of funding disagreement. And Return of the Jedi is exactly what you expect from a modern day comic adaptation of a movie. It's literally the movie trimmed down as much as it could. Very little to no deviation from the script. None of the major stars in there, new actors, and I'd heard a whisper that Mark Hamill had refused to do the Return of the Jedi one due to the fact that he had given his time quite freely on the first two shows because of its NPR, and I believe I'm, you know, NPR's kind of non-profit.
Yeah.
But they sold the rights to somebody else, possibly who released the cassettes and things like that, or whether it was third party radio station, and Mark Hamill was not happy about that at all, and therefore refused to do Jedi.
I did hear about that, and yeah, it's unfortunate that it's usually somebody tries to monetize something, but yeah, when they released the cassettes and the CDs and everything, obviously somebody's making money off that, whether NPR sold the rights or whatever. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think the only returning official actor in the movies was Anthony Daniels for Return of the Jedi. I mean, they even got like John Lithgow to do as Yoda, which I think is hilarious, and Ed Begley Jr. as Boba Fett. And I kind of view these as, I mean, not so much Return of the Jedi, since it's pretty much by the script, but it's like multiverse kind of, like you get some extra stuff here and there. And even though it's not canon, you just go with it and have fun with it and try not to nitpick every little thing that's off from the movies.
And it's such a shame that Brian Daley died, you know, only a few hours after recording was finished on Jedi. The cast knew he wasn't very well, and they recorded a special message, which sadly he didn't even get to hear because he passed away very close after. So sad day for Star Wars fans.
Yeah, it's crazy, the coincidence in the timing there. But, you know, Brian Daley provided lots of content for Star Wars fans and for other things that he had written. So he definitely left his mark, you know, touched a lot of people in that way.
Right then, Chris. So on to collecting then. So I've never seen these in the UK other than the ones that I borrowed from the library. So I'd imagine the States would be quite a few of these, the original audio narrated cassettes. So I'm led to believe they're very easy to pick up. They're still quite simple. And I guess sealed may be a bit more tricky, but there'll be quite a lot of secondhand copies of these hanging around.
I see these pretty, you know, frequently for going to antique shops and collectible shops and shows and stuff. You typically see basic main release version out there. I just went to a show a few weeks ago and somebody had one, a beat up and battered one. And they're asking like 10 times what they go for on eBay, but still cool. Still cool to see.
And what I'm going to say, far more common, and it wouldn't surprise me if you can still buy these new from Amazon or places like that, would be the CDs. So obviously the Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi CD sets, but also the 12 CD set as well, which is just another way of making money, I think, from collectors, but including bonus tracks.
We always love bonus tracks, you know. It's they've got the making of and some promo spots, and you know, we love that extra stuff to soak it all in. But yeah, the CD sets, I actually see less of the CD sets at shows, but I have seen them at like secondhand or thrift shops or Goodwill type of places, but all used. Finding some of the stuff sealed is pretty tough. You know, the original release stuff, anything that's been reissued or whatever, might be able to find sealed, but still cool. Us Star Wars collectors love completing a run. So you got to get every variation out there. There's probably, you know, ones in different languages and stuff. I don't know.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Something that I see a lot in the US are press kits and things like that. So, I mean, what exactly is a press kit?
I mean, a press kit is usually something that's sent out to various members of the press, and it just outlines what it's all about, what you're going to experience with the radio dramas. You know, it has a printed out sheet with the breakdown of everything that's included. It's going to be touched upon. Sometimes they'll have pictures. They'll have a little promo poster. They'll have just something to get, you know, the members of the press to write about it, let people know about it. Some of the stuff is more readily available than others, but as with a lot of these press kits, a lot of members probably just tossed them after they, you know, wrote about it or, you know, did an interview about it. So I know a lot of different releases have press kits, you know, not just for the NPR dramas. Finding one complete in good condition, you know, it's a cool addition to your collection.
Obviously, you've got your original press kit, which I find, you know, you're obviously going to have photographs of Anthony Daniels and Mark Hamill standing next to the microphones. But the second one that Duncan Jenkins put on the SWCA is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Star Wars press kit.
Yeah.
Which I find amazing that they've been allowed to use that title in there.
Some of this stuff, because it's maybe like in that gray area of licensing, I don't know. They definitely got away with it. But it's neat to see stuff like that. Pretty unique type of item. I don't think there's too many Star Wars things that have the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy also attached to it.
Now, come along with these, you'd expect posters. So do you want to talk about the Star Wars poster? Because I actually think this is pretty good.
The one with C-3PO at the microphone?
Yeah.
Man, it's pretty cool. The artwork is great. C-3PO with his headphones on, doing his recording, and some great space scenes in the background, but then there's like Saturn in the background and stuff, and with a couple of TIE fighters going through there. Great imagery.
The Empire one takes it to a whole new level.
I know. With the Yoda one with all the colorful creatures, is that the one you're talking
about?
Yes,
it is.
Oh man, such a great image. Didn't realize there was like horned chameleons in on Dagobah, but there are, and the colors pop. Yoda just looking off into the sky in Dagobah with R2 in the background and his hut and some other creatures. Just great stuff.
You'd expect that to be late 70s, early 80s, but clearly it couldn't be because there was an embargo on Yoda, and there's no way that this poster would have been out before Empire. And everybody on the planet had seen Empire, but then you've still got all these, you know, bright orange little dragons and blue things when Dagobah looked nothing like that at all.
Yeah, somebody took some liberties with that, and I mean, Lucasfilm apparently approved it, so What the heck?
There's no Jedi radio drama poster, which, again, probably isn't that much a surprise. I would be surprised if there's nothing out there for Jedi. That you would have thought there'd be some kind of teaser for NPR, but nothing listed on the SWCA, which is unusual. However, when you look at the books and scripts, it only lists Star Wars and Empire, but there is a Jedi drama oversized paperback as well, so maybe it's just an oversight.
You know, it just hasn't been updated on the archive. I tried doing some digging and stuff. There's some other small items out there for the radio dramas, but it's tough to find anything else for Return of the Jedi stuff. I mean, I can't say I did a super deep dive, but yeah, it's unfortunate. But like you said, you'd think that there would be like a promo poster or something like that, but doesn't seem like it.
And I guess it's because, I mean, 1996,
yeah,
quite late in the day, there's, you know, Star Wars was coming back through, you know, the Zahn novels and things like that, but it wasn't really the hype it was before. Mm-hmm. You know, the Phantom Menace juggernaut had taken off, you know, big style, but it does seem odd. But you Americans like your buttons, don't you?
Oh, yes, we love our buttons. I mean, there's ones that came out for the Star Wars release, and their various radio stations would put their radio handles on them. The first one, really, it seems to be with Vader. It's just black and white, straight up Star Wars, National Public Radio, and then the radio station underneath him. It's just a headshot. That's a cool one. I've never seen that one before. Never seen it anywhere. And then there's another one, and it has a like kind of a waist up shot of Vader holding his lightsaber, black and white again, but it, you know, just says Star Wars, and then it has the radio station WBEZ FM 91.5. So I don't know if there's other variations of these. This is just what's on the archive for A New Hope, but I'm sure there are. But they're pretty cool. What do you think?
Well, I think they are great. It's absolutely wonderful, and you know, they went right with Vader, I think, on these. Maybe C-3PO is another choice that they could have gone with.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know how you can tell if something is hard to find generally when you check the archive?
I don't know. Tell me.
It's because it's from the collection of Pete Vilma. So yes. Anything from the collection of Pete Vilma means it's nearly impossible to get a hold of. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm right with you on that one. I think there's going to be, you know, lots of different buttons from different mm-hmm. stations. And the second one's from Chicago. I don't know where KBPS is. But
yeah,
you'd
sure.
expect the big, you know, New York's about to have its own style. And, mm-hmm. you know, Washington, yeah.
Yeah, be a lot LA, of yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely something to keep an eye out on. You know, you just hope that there aren't any fakes going around. It is pretty niche, so I doubt it. But just be aware if you do come across something, do your due diligence. It might be a little diamond in the rough you find at a antique shop.
The next thing I find really intriguing is the Kirkwood Community College program guide. That's absolutely wonderful. I just can't see the link between Kirkwood Community College unless that's a radio station as well, possibly.
Yeah, this one, I mean, talk about niche and like really something that's pretty rare. Obviously, like Pete Vilmer, if Duncan Jenkins has something, it is probably hard to find. Yeah, this one's obviously new to me as far as what's out there. I've never heard of Kirkwood Community College in Grand Rapids or Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Very far away from me. but great image with, you know, Vader. It's the same image that was on one of the buttons, but this is a full image. Looks like a 3 or 4 color program. Something cool. I doubt you'll find one anywhere, but it's cool that it exists.
Well, absolutely. And back to buttons and Empire Strikes Back. Yoda goes public. I love the fact that there's a Wisconsin green Yoda button. Is that where the Packers are from?
Yes, it is where the Packers are from. Very, very fitting connection there. But Wisconsin Public Radio. Just so random. I love it, though.
I mean, from that very early spell of, you know, you couldn't imagine a lot of buttons being released or any materials. So you're going to be able to get the tapes quite easily. You're going to be able to get the CDs very easily.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to get the posters, I would assume, as well. I think the posters will be dotted around. Dealers may be asking for quite a price on those, but I can't imagine them being too tricky to track down. But the rest, I think, is going to be really, really tough.
Yeah, I would say, you know, aside from the audio stuff that's out there, the tapes, the CDs, and there's even like SD cards and there's some random ways to get it on audio. I would say the posters, probably the next thing that you're going to be able to find. The other stuff, man, it's like the guide we just talked about, the press kits, all that stuff is probably going to be tough to track down. I would say the books after the audio stuff, you know, that's probably what you're going to find easiest. But yeah, if you want to go down this rabbit hole, I would say you're not going to have to go too far to get a little slice of radio drama merch to represent in your collection.
You know what? I'm likening this to the holiday special, whereby it's got its own little unique place in the Star Wars collection.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good point. It kind of fits in that it's like Star Wars adjacent, kind of from the main line of stuff that's out there. I think, you know, this definitely fits into that holiday special area, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So Star Wars Should the Jedi came out, what, 97-ish? And, mm-hmm. you know, as far as we can tell, other than the script, not a lot came out for that. And then it expected to end. So I was really surprised when a friend of ours, Pete Davis, pointed me to Topps Trading Cards. I think the Topps Trading Cards anyway. And celebrating 40 years of Star Wars. And what do you have on the cards?
Crazy. I mean,
the Star Wars poster.
I know, the Star Wars poster, the one with C-3PO at the mic. Again, it basically has the poster on the card, and then it just has Star Wars radio drama airs, and then 40 years of Star Wars, 1981. Topps is great for including a lot of this, like we just said, Star Wars adjacent type stuff into their sets. This is great because you've got the base card, but then with trading cards these days, there's parallels. Just like there's...
Well, what is a parallel? Because I read that about 20 times and I hadn't had a clue what it's talking about. So I saw that each pack comes with at least one parallel. What the hell does that mean?
I know. Yeah, we'll have to do a trading card discussion at some point here that delves really into it. So they'll have a box of packs that are all sealed with random cards in them, but Topps will insert a parallel of a base card into each pack. Depending on what the set is, this particular set had green, blue, purple, gold, red, all these different versions of this one particular card. And each color is associated with a serial number, which gets rarer and rarer depending on the color that you get. For this particular set, the green is the regular parallel, and then you could get a red, which is, there's only one of them in the entire world, and obviously it would be a lot harder to pull something like that out of these packs where the cards are inserted randomly. It's like a built-in scarcity, and it just drives collectors to hunt down that super rare version of the card, and the rarer they are, the more desirable, and the more they cost. And so, I mean, you go from this green one. You could buy it right now on eBay for like
about $3.
$2 or $3. Yeah. And then a gold one numbered to 40, it's gonna cost like $30 or $40, and so on. So you can see the difference in value for the rarer one, which is the gold, versus the green one, which is pretty easy to get. So it's cool that you have this, because if you don't have that many items to chase down for the radio dramas, then you can look into these. And yeah, it's just another thing that's newer, you know, it's not that old, so you should be able to find them fairly easily. I mean, not the red one, because that's probably tucked in away in somebody's collection somewhere, but trading cards are a whole different animal.
Yeah, I never knew that. I never knew what the parallel meant. Obviously, yeah. I knew some colors were rare, and it's all, mm-hmm. you know, I can get the whole driving the collector's market crazy, yeah. But equally, that's how they're going to make the money, aren't they?
It definitely is. You know, Topps is in it to make money, but they, you know, they want to give collectors something that it's worth, you know, buying. Putting a card like this into a set, it's a great idea.
And the last thing I want to talk about then, so mm-hmm. these guys did a panel at Star Wars Celebration. They asked the audience not to record the panel, and I haven't heard any leaks from that at all, so it sounds as though that everybody who was there pretty much, you know, listening. But John and Maria Tinutu called A Wind to Shake the Stars, a book that was going to be released November, December 2023. I don't think mm-hmm. it's out yet because of a change of publisher. But they're going to release a book given the ins and outs of the Star Wars radio dramas, which I think is going to be an absolute fascinating read. I'm really looking forward to that coming out. I know there were some juicy tidbits released in the interview from Pete Davis again, who was there at the panel.
Yes.
But he hasn't shared a lot because he holds them kind of things quite dear to his heart.
Not letting anything slip.
Wasn't cheap for memory.
That's great. I heard, you know, Pete talk about that. And I think, you know, it just adds more to the lore and the drama to the Star Wars radio dramas. Hopefully it's successful and you get to pony up a little bit of change for it, but should be cool to hear.
Well, yes, The Winds That Shook the Stars hardcover was due out back end of 2023, so hopefully it won't be too long, because it would be great, you know, to pick that up and learn more about the NPR radio dramas. But once again, I don't know about you, Chris, but I would urge everybody to go out and just give certainly Star Wars a re-listen.
100% agree. Certainly worth your time. You know, if you're a Star Wars fan and you haven't listened to them and you're looking for, you know, a little bit extra experience with, you know, your Star Wars fandom, check it out and enjoy the fun Star Wars content.
Well, Chris, that's a nice short one for us this month. Hopefully some of our listeners could get, you know, 10, 15 hours worth of fresh Star Wars listening by checking those out. So onwards to the next month. And without much further from me, it's goodbye from Rich.
That's goodbye from Chris.
So thanks for listening to Collecting Tracks. If you want to be a part of the action, stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit fantatracks.com or check out the free Fantatracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fantatracks.com. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at Fantatracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the Fantatracks intro, Andy Lyth for our Collecting Tracks open music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember to tune in to Good Morning Tatooine, live Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook and YouTube. Check out Fantatracks Radio Friday evenings at 7 p.m. UK time for new episodes of The Fanta from Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks and Cannon Fodder, and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks.
Coming up next on Fantatracks Radio, it's Making Tracks.